I want you to put your hands together.
There goes to the neighborhood.
And welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause.
There goes to the neighborhood.
Alrighty, we are now recording. Welcome back to the Smokescreen Podcast. I am your host, Antonio Brown.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
Get out of here.
I'm somebody new every week. No, I'm Chris. I'm here with my co-host, James.
Hello, guys.
And we got a doozy today. We mentioned this last week, and I posted on the Patreon and as well as Twitter, I believe, to watch this documentary we're going to talk about. It's a doozy,
it really is, to say
the least. So, yeah, this is the 18th episode. Is that right? I think you can just confirm that.
Number 18.
Number 18. But, yeah, we want to talk about this, and we waited last week to give people a chance to watch it. You don't have to absolutely see it, but you kind of do, you know, because there's so many little nuanced things that happen. So if you have not seen it, I would suggest pause this podcast and go watch it. It's two parts on HBO. Part one and two. It's about probably 2 hours and 10 minutes total.
Yeah,
2:20 maybe.
It's about an hour each part.
Yeah, about an hour each part, and it's separated like that. So it's a case. It's a kind of a true crime type of thing, but it's really unique, especially in today's day and age when it concerns the law and mental health. It goes into many other things. So yeah, part one is kind of set up as the prosecution. And part two as the defense, and the name of it, as I probably have not mentioned yet, is I Love You, Now Die. And this is one that I think I told you, James, I look for documentaries almost every night, and I passed it by probably 10 times.
Yeah.
And finally, I've watched the other ones. Let me click play, and you know, if I don't like it, I'll click off in 15 or 20 minutes. And I was engrossed by it. It just from the get-go, it was like, holy shit, could you get this? As you know, when you came and watched it after we talked about it, you start off with this one opinion.
Yeah.
And you completely swap.
Well, you texted me and told me to watch it.
Right.
And I never got around to it. So when I came over a little early last week so we could watch it, and you had to bite your tongue.
Yes.
The whole time, because you knew the emotions that I was going through. As I watched it, because you're yelling at the screen again. It's one of those.
Right.
And
it's almost like you need a reaction video, like a fucking Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah.
It really is, because I knew what you were saying out loud. That was exactly what I was saying, you know, the week before, whatever it was. And it totally changes. So I guess for anybody that's still here or have already, now you're back. Now you're back. You've watched it. We can get into it. So I guess let's give an overview and just kind of see where it goes. Or do you have anything?
No,
I know you had some notes there.
Yeah, I have some notes. I was just going to say that, like you said, the documentary is on HBO. It's called I Love You, Now Die. And it is directed by Erin Lee Carr. And you may not recognize her name, but you may recognize a couple of the other documentaries she's done. She's
really young.
She did Mommy, Dead, and Dearest. About the Munchausen by proxy syndrome girl who her and her boyfriend ended up killing her mom. That was really good. Chris and I watched that one.
Yeah. Did we talk about that on a podcast?
No.
Yeah.
And that would not be bad to talk about.
It's a good, it's a horrible story, but it's a great documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, she does outstanding fucking documentaries.
And yeah, she did At the Heart of Gold, the inside the USA gymnastics scandal. That's a good one where the gymnastics doctor was groping these girls checking them out. Really big scandal. But these documentaries are so well done. So I just wanted to say that you had already touched on the fact that it is two parts. And this takes place in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. You want to lay out the kind of the gist of it?
Yeah.
And kind of lay it out. You know, basic, like what maybe the people would have heard the first run through in the paper before all this trial started.
Right. So essentially what it is the what makes it, you know, really different as far as a true crime thing and really, really applicable to today's society is it's a text-based relationship between Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy. These are the two subjects, basically.
Yeah. Well, wait, basically, they find a kid dead in a truck.
Yes, yeah. They find a kid dead in a truck. So, yeah, if we're going backwards, this guy, you know, had committed suicide, and it was by, he had a water pump, I believe, in his actual truck he had bought. So he did the whole CO2 poisoning route, and he did this in the back of a Kmart parking lot, and like you said, near Boston somewhere.
Yeah.
Two small towns this is based in outside of Boston. So they find him, you know, it's pretty much an open and closed case. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a suicide. And then they find out that she had contact with him. She was a girlfriend. And, you know, after discovering some text messages that were odd to say the least.
Right.
Then they go through her phone and realize, wait a minute. She actually told him to do it. She texted him and said, this is how it's presented. I'm going how it's kind of right. In the order it's presented.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Right. So at first you're seeing, like, they start looking into it as more of not really as a homicide yet, but they're starting to think in that way because this girl has obviously told him, you need to go ahead and do it, and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, or is it today? You're going to do it today. There's been this history, obviously. And it goes back. So when you watch the first part, you're just like, oh my God, she is evil. She is a bitch. She, you know, this and that. You're just yelling this stuff at the TV because it is a horrible thing regardless. And she's not, I'm not saying she's completely innocent. We'll get to all that by any means. But then, so essentially that's what it becomes, is a homicide investigation on this girl who is 16 at the time. These are two kids. I mean, these are young kids. They don't even have fully developed brains yet, which comes into it as well, I believe.
Yes, it does.
No doubt about it. And so, yeah, they end up investigating her, and they get a subpoena for her phone, and they search, and they have this. Basically, what's really interesting and unique about the case is they have the entire relationship documented. I mean, from however, you know, I think it was just a year or two they spoke, and they never met but like five times in person, even though they lived only like an hour apart.
Yes.
So a very unique case in that everything they started digging into is actually documented through phone records, so they can read all these texts back and forth and what time of day and all that. Now, interestingly enough, which will come into play as well, phone calls were not recorded, so that's something there's no actual record of. They can only see the times they spoke on the phone, which was rare, actually.
Yeah.
It was completely by text. So you find out all this, and then it goes through, and basically the prosecution, the state, presents their case. And essentially, their case was that she was a loner in school. She didn't really have a lot of friends. And this is a young, pretty girl. But, you know, so it was one of those things where they presented it as she didn't have a lot of friends. And I'm not saying some of it's not true. I'm just saying how they presented the case, especially in the documentary. And, you know, people didn't really necessarily want to hang out with her and stuff like that. She did play softball, travel softball. But then it became a thing where they presented it as she, in order to gain sympathy and attention, she talked her boyfriend over text messages into killing himself. And because he did that, she would now be the grieving girlfriend. She actually organized a softball tournament in memory of him in her town as opposed to his town. And she got all this attention from all these people who she had contacted throughout high school, who never really wanted anything to do with her. They weren't necessarily mean to her. I don't think it was presented that way, but they didn't really want to hang out with her.
Right.
So,
excuse me.
And then basically that's how it's presented, is, you know, she's the reason he committed suicide in the first part.
Yeah. Yeah. You find out like early on, you know, they find the kid there dead, and everybody's shocked. And
yes,
it's like he had just gotten, his dad was a tugboat captain, and
yeah, this was definitely
Conrad,
the family trade.
Yeah, right, Conrad, right. The boy Conrad Roy, who's the one that committed suicide, he had just gotten his own captain's license, and everything seemed to be going great for him, and nobody could understand how he killed himself. They found him this way, and like Chris said, it was pretty much open and shut. He killed himself. Well, then they find that he had written these letters to his family, these suicide letters, saying, you know, he can't live like this anymore. And, oh, by the way, here's the passwords to my laptop and my phone. And so they get in there and they see these texts from the girl, like Chris said, where she's encouraging him to do this. So the family really, you know, pursues, hey, you know, this girl killed our son. You know, they want to get her in trouble.
This
and everything.
Is now a homicide in their eyes.
Yeah. And so you can imagine as you're watching this documentary and you're thinking, oh, my God, how could this girl do this? This guy had a perfect life and you know, she basically coached him and convinced him and really pushed him to commit suicide. Because some of these texts Chris was talking about, it would be like, hey, what are you doing? And she would say, nothing. Are you going to do it today? I mean,
right,
really all forward.
Badgering him.
Yeah. And they kept doing that. So you're like, oh, my God, this girl is a freaking monster.
Right. And the big part, of course, which really, I think, sealed her deal in public opinion before you get to part two.
Yeah.
Is when he actually did it, you find out that, you know, he got scared. He got out of the truck because he was obviously suffocating because he was going through with it finally, apparently, you know, after she talked him into it. And he called her. So this is one of the things that's not actually on record, but they can just see they talked for 40 minutes, two times. And he got out of the truck because he was now scared. You know, it was actually going through with it. And she said, get back in.
Right.
Now, that's all, that was not actually documented. So if you ask somebody on the street that's seen this documentary, we just watched a little piece of a podcast actually ourselves. They got it wrong too. People think that she texted that to him, so it's like documented.
No.
She did not text him, get back in the truck. The last thing she ever texted him was, Conrad, where are you at? You're scaring me.
Yeah.
So this supposedly happened on a phone call.
Yeah, well, she told a friend of hers, there is a text to a friend.
Yes.
Where she said, I could have saved him. And she's like, no, you couldn't. And she's like, yes, he got out and I told him to get back in. So that's where they got it. But there is no record of that really happening.
Right.
So they're saying, you know, she's really laying it on thick so she can get sympathy from her friends. They don't believe she really said that to him. And after watching the documentary, I'm not sure she said that to him.
I'm not either.
And
because there's a lot of contradictory statements from her. We'll get into all this stuff as well.
And so what I would like to say, first and foremost, is it's brilliant the way this documentarian lays this out.
Yes.
Is it really does have you wanting to have her publicly executed for doing this. Because, honestly, it's not like a Kevorkian-type deal. Conrad didn't have a terminal illness. She wasn't assisting him in suicide for that reason or whatever.
Right, where it's a sympathy thing.
Yes. So you really are like, girl, you know, this guy, he was a little weak mentally, and you pushed him over the edge and caused him to do this and everything. So you do want to see her punished to the fullest extent of the law. And then there's another
problem with that. Yeah. Real quick though, is there is no law.
Correct.
There is nothing illegal about telling somebody to do something.
No.
It goes back to the old sticks and stones thing. You've heard it a million times. Well, if he or she told you to jump off a bridge, would you do it? They're saying yes.
Right.
And so this sets a new precedent. That's why it's so important too. Anyway, go
it
ahead.
Is.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, you have no sympathy for this girl.
No.
None at all. But, excuse me, later what you find out, and it really annoys you at his parents, and I think you would agree.
I said this when we were watching.
Because they paint it like they were so shocked. What you find out later is that Conrad's life wasn't all sunshine and daisies.
Absolutely not.
Conrad had some mental issues. He was chronically depressed. Conrad had tried to kill himself four times previously. So this was not as shocking to everybody as they make it seem.
Right. And part one, because this, now you're getting into, go ahead with the part. This is part two of the defense and what kind of the other side of the story.
Yeah. So you find out that they met on vacation. Their families both go to some, like, there's a lake or something where there's a campground there, and they were all hanging out. They met there. She was friends, I think, with his sister, and through the sister, she started talking to Conrad. And I don't even know if I've actually, we've said her name. Her name is Michelle Carter. That's the late. That's the girl who did the texting. And Conrad Roy is the person who committed
suicide. I mentioned him early on. So, yeah, from this all point, right. Michelle and Conrad.
Yeah, so Michelle became friends with Conrad's sister. And then through that friendship, she started talking to Conrad. They, I feel like, fell in love as much as you can fall in love these days, which is pretty strong for these kids these days, a virtual kind of romance and courting scenario where everything is done via text.
Right.
They seem to hit it off good, but he had some depression issues. They start showing these vlogs that Conrad made.
Right.
On his own, where it's just him talking about not wanting to live, and things would be so much easier if he wasn't here and all this stuff. And so you're going, okay, hold on a second. What's going on here? Well, he confided this in her.
Yes.
And
all these feelings about depression, and he mentioned social anxiety in his vlog.
Yep.
And he confided in her and all this stuff and how he really felt, because he didn't want his parents to know he was still suicidal after the last attempt failed, which was pills. I think it was some kind of strong Tylenol, essentially.
Yeah.
Aspirin.
Yeah. And, yeah, so you think, okay, this, you know, the girl doesn't care anything about him. Well, no. What they're not showing in the papers, I think the papers fail to do this because they sensationalized it as well.
Yes,
all
absolutely.
The media up there sensationalized this.
Like they do everything.
Yeah. They didn't show all the texts where she was begging him to get help, and she was... You know, he kept threatening to kill himself to her and wouldn't answer the phone after he threatened. And she would be there for like a whole day. Conrad, I'm scared to death. You know,
please answer. Please.
Yeah,
it became a cry wolf thing between them. So once he confided in her all this kind of stuff, she was like, you know, you need to get help and all this kind of stuff. And this was constant for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he would say, no, you know, good night. I'll see you in the next life, and go to bed or fall asleep. And she's there all night crying and texting him, are you okay? You're scaring me. And then the next day he would be alive. And this happened many, many, many times.
Right. This is not just counting his four real attempts.
Right.
This is just constant. He's doing this to her, emotional roller coaster.
Because I think the first time that she found out the, you know, how serious it was when he OD'd on pills. They got him to the hospital and pumped his stomach and all that. And then he texts back, you know, he's been wondering where I've been. Yeah, I stayed in the hospital last week.
Right.
Tried to kill myself.
Yes. And so she would say things to him about, getting help, talking to his parents and stuff. And he told her, if you ever tell anybody and try to stop me from doing this, I'll never speak to you again. I'll hate your guts and all this stuff. So,
yeah, that
you
was.
You can see he's the older guy. I know he's only a year older than her, but you know how it is when you're that age.
Right.
You know, he has this power over her, and she really likes him. So she's wanting to do anything she can to keep him. So she's going to keep her mouth shut.
Right. That was I think the text was very close along the lines of, the only thing that would ever make me hate you is if you tell anybody about this.
Yeah.
And every other one was pretty much a loving text. You know, I love you, babe, and this and that. And then you also find out in part two that he was also kind of a dick to her in ways.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying anything horrible, but they connected on this weird little mean thing where he would say, you know, like, fuck you, bitch, in a text, and she would be like, what? And then he would start laughing, just kidding. And they played these weird word games as well, where he would say a word and she would say something related. So it was a very odd thing. And again, as I mentioned before, they never, every time they wanted to actually meet,
I think it said they did five times. There was no details about how those things went. Even living just an hour apart, which is not long for anybody. And because he drove around in a truck, you know, he, like you said, he had his captain's license, very early age. He was 18. I think she was 16, I believe.
Right.
Maybe he was 17. But yeah, they every time they wanted to meet, they somehow talked each other out of it, or somebody backed out or something. So it was a really odd relation, even for online standards, I guess.
Yeah, and what you find out also is that he didn't have the best relationship with his dad or his mom. You know, there was this, they split up, and it affected him. You know, he was from a broken home. He ended up getting a stepmom or dad's girlfriend or whatever who hated his guts.
Yep. Dad beat his ass.
Really physically beat him like a man.
Beat him like a man on the ground due to something in the microwave, I believe it was, and gave him a concussion.
Right.
And mother, who had also a new boyfriend, of course.
Yep.
Was arrested previously for beating or hitting the father when they were still together.
Right.
So he went through this broken home. It wasn't this perfect family thing going on. He's beating his ass. I'm not saying it's every day or anything, but they kind of hid that from me in part one.
Yes, they do.
And then you find out the mother has also been arrested for hitting the dad. So there was domestic violence there, is what I'm saying. And, of course, my pet peeve is they get out of this relationship, they get a divorce or whatever, they split up, and they immediately have significant others again, and their kid, they don't even know what the fuck's going on with their kid.
Amen.
And I hate that. I'm sorry. I just
yeah, because they're so consumed with this new partner.
Yes.
They're missing all these red flags because they're just oblivious. It's like,
they have,
okay, yep. I'm going to feed you, clothe you, and beat your ass for not cleaning up stuff while you're watching a basketball game.
Right.
Because basically the kid says, Conrad says, his dad says, go clean up this mess or whatever, scrape your plate off or something crazy, stupid, like Chris said, something to do with a microwave. He says, I'll do it as soon as this basketball game goes to commercial break. And his dad just beats the crap out of him. And I'm sure he was egged on by the new woman in his life who hated Conrad.
And then because she said something like, he's a piece of shit.
Yes. And so Conrad's life was not perfect. And Conrad, and this is the part that, Chris and I both, you know, we kind of think we're no experts, okay? We have gut feelings about things. But we do worry that this new generation is over-medicated.
They absolutely are. There's no doubt about it.
Both of these kids.
Both of them.
Were over-medicated.
So what you find out as well, in addition to Conrad's past, as far as for, you know, suicide attempts, he's on, you know, antidepressants and all this stuff, all this medication. She previously had also tried to kill herself. She actually tied a noose in her closet and stood up on a chair and wrapped it around her neck, but stood there, she said, for 45 minutes crying because she couldn't get the quote-unquote balls to do it.
Right.
And you find out later on there's a doctor called up by the witness, a psychiatrist, by the defense, I'm sorry, as a witness, and he goes into this whole spiel about she was on all these antidepressants as well. So she was on Prozac, and he comes to the conclusion that she was involuntarily intoxicated. Is that the way you put it, I believe, over time?
Yeah.
And you can kind of see a pattern from when it shifted from, please don't get help, all this stuff, to, okay, if you're going to do it, just do it. Get it done.
Yeah, because I know this is really what you want.
Because I know this is really what
and
you
I'm
want.
Support
I'm
going to
support you in this way. So just do it and quit talking about it. Because he would do it, he would talk about it, and then he wouldn't do it. And then he kept talking about it again. I really want to do it. And she would say, finally, okay, are you going to do it today?
Yes.
Are you going to do it? I need to know, you know. Now, this does not mean she's completely innocent of anything. It's just
right.
Because there were horrible text messages during that time. What we're saying is she wasn't in her right mind either.
No.
And she's, but you know, she did probably, you know, want some attention. She asked him, can I be, tell people I'm your girlfriend?
Yes.
I will be there for your family. But she, in her mind is what this doctor is saying is she thinks she's doing the right thing.
She's supporting him and what he wants to do.
And what he became like overbearing about yep. when she was initially saying, no, please don't get help. And so when you get to those parts, it starts to like, wait a minute. It's not just this evil Michelle girl is just telling him to go kill himself like it's presented.
And there are things about her. You know, she has a look about her where it seems like every picture that the newspaper chose to put in the paper would be where she had this, like she smells shit.
Like a smirk. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A smirk on her face. And you know how they pick those pictures. And it just painted her in a bad light. But she was just a teenager, and she was a teenager who craved, you know, attention, popularity. She just wanted to be included in the group. And you could see other texts where these girls were mean to her. And they were saying, she was saying, why don't you like me? Well, you're annoying, Michelle. And she would send texts like, I'm so sorry. I won't be annoying anymore to you. Just please be my friend. Say you're my friend. Things like that. And so basically she only had Conrad in her life who seemed to be, you know, this support cast. Her only support cast was a guy who was mentally damaged himself.
Right.
And Chris made one great point, and I do stand by this. These two kids lived an hour apart. If they would have seen each other, if on that day, instead of all this, if he would have ridden over there and hung out with her.
Yes.
And just been open about his feelings and say, you know what, I mean, I need a hug or whatever it is. I don't know. You kind of don't know what you're missing. You don't know what you're going to miss. And you see this person who cares about you. You're looking in their eyes. Actually looking in her eyes, you see the tear rolling down their cheek, you feel the hug that they're giving you, you know that electric feeling when you touch the person you care about. I mean, all this texting and everything is so impersonal.
It is. It becomes where you're almost, you know, blind to the fact that you're speaking to a real person on the other end of this phone. And it's just odd to me that, you know, whatever was going on between them, this little romantic fling on text messages, that they never met in person being that close. I mean, I could understand if it was across the country, but if he would have driven, because it sounds like to me what, you know, and what you find out kind of through this documentary is that during this last little run before he actually did it, it looked like he was getting cold feet again. Like he was thinking, rethinking it. He didn't want to leave his family.
Right.
But she kept on kind of nagging, like, you know, you need to do it today. You need to do it at a certain time so nobody thinks anything about it. Just get it done and you'll be happy type thing.
Yeah, or you're going to hate yourself tomorrow like you have
before.
Like
you had the last 15 times. Yes. And if what I was saying is if he would just have rode over there or they met up or something, if you have that person right there and feel that, like you just mentioned all that, the real experience of being with that person, he would have never gotten that truck.
They might have ran away together.
Something.
That would be the worst case.
Or decided to get help together, which she actually tried to say early on, but they didn't tell you that early on.
Right.
She's like, she admitted all this stuff to him about, you know, she's had these problems too, and she's depressed, and they've seen the devil, you know, and all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get help together. You know, somebody can help us, a hospital or whatever it is, an institution. So that was actually suggested before everything kind of flipped. And that doctor kind of pointed out at the time, at some time she was on all these antidepressants and Prozac and as well as him, that she kind of then flipped the script and said, you know what, well, if I'm supporting him, I need to be supporting him, and this is what he really wants.
And there was that witness you were talking about, the doctor who was testified for the defense. he clearly showed on there where she was taking double the medication she was supposed to be. They changed her medicine.
They went, was it Prozac to, I don't know the names of all
maybe
these.
Maybe Celexa.
Celexa, I believe you mentioned. So they changed, and as you know, if you know anything about today's, you know, quote unquote medicine, changing those types of brain altering drugs can be really bad for, you know, a small group of people, but nevertheless, I mean, the danger's there, especially in younger people.
Yes.
Because the brain is not fully developed until you're 24, 25.
And each person's, you know, mental health issues are uniquely their own. I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of every, you know, mental health issue. But as long as I've lived, I mean, I have encountered, you know, multiple people who have had mental health issues, and I actually had a really good friend who did kill himself and got a suicide letter 2 weeks later. And I'm telling you, I never saw it coming and never had any idea of the things he was going through that was in this letter. So I don't pretend to know everything about the intricacies of what these two particularly were going through, other than what text we had to watch in the documentary and the doctors talking.
Right.
So don't beat us up for and think we're insensitive to mental health issues.
No, that's actually why we're doing this, you is know, to talk about it, because especially today, like you mentioned earlier, you know, we always wondered why when we were kids there was no ADHD or all these different now clinical things to put all these kids on Adderall and these other things. And people are so over-medicated. That's just the go-to answer. When you go to the doctor, instead of, like, you know, get outside and play or exercise and all these other things or eat better, it's here's a magic pill.
And I worry about the consequences of using those drugs at such an early age, at what they do to a mind when it does mature.
Right.
Is it maturing at the same time? You know, I don't know. I worry. And they become these crutches that these kids are now used to taking at such a young age. It becomes a part of their life. They probably never think they're going to be able to get off these drugs, and they may never be able to. Again, I don't pretend to know. All I know is, like Chris said, you know, when we were young, you would hear the word hyper thrown around.
Yes,
that
hyper.
Kid's hyper.
You would have hyper.
He's hyperactive. And so, I don't know. Depression is a real thing. I've had firsthand, you know, experiences with that with my own daughter. I know how mean kids can be in high school through my own experiences. But I do think today it's ratcheted up a notch because everybody has all these social media.
Yes,
accounts.
I think social media amplifies it for damn sure. It's probably always been there. And girls, I can tell you, from you and me both having daughters,
yeah,
girls are horrible to each other.
They are.
Worse than dudes. I'm telling you that
now.
You
can't get away from it. When you leave school, when we were in school, you could get away from all the assholes when you got home.
Exactly.
Now you're always
connected.
Connected and there. And people can bully you from the time you get home to the time you go to bed.
Right. I mean, in today's society, you can be bullied over a text message, over Facebook or Twitter or whatever you use, YouTube, it doesn't matter. And like you said, at least when if you, you know, had issues with kids at school, for example, when you go home, at least you got, overnight and regrouped. Right, exactly. And, you know, get some time with your family or talk to somebody or whatever. So I think that, you know, and again, it's certainly not anti-social media. It's just a tool. But just like anything, it can be used for the wrong purpose. And I think it amplifies all this stuff. So,
and so this girl, I'm sorry, I want to kind of go back to this as far as I want to say that this girl, it really was pitiful how bad she wanted attention. And
yes.
How bad she wanted to hang out with these girls outside of school. Which is also surprising how we didn't see messages where she was trying to hang out with Conrad, because she definitely was trying to hang out with
right.
these girls
exactly.
outside of school. And they would always have an excuse, no, 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 no. Or when she finally pressed them, they would say, you're just annoying.
Right. And then,
You know, and there was, I think she was, it's like the one guy who was part of the documentary. I think he was a reporter for one of the big magazines or something that covered this story.
Yep.
The way he put it was, is, you know, she was kind of known as the girl who, you know, sometimes she tells the truth, but sometimes she's lying.
Yep.
For attention, and girls spoke about her that way behind her back. And, you know, there's, even though there's some pictures of her with these girls in school, but it just shows you all these selfies and whatever. It's just a, it's just an Instagram moment. It's all it is to them.
Yeah, they really are all fake.
It's just all fake for the most part. I'm not saying everybody, obviously, but she was obviously known in this little school or town as the girl who's just kind of weird.
And
nobody, of course, knew all the details of her depression and trying to kill herself and being on medication. And Conrad was an outlet for all that, just like he was for her.
What she discovered was, okay, all the begging I've done for them to hang out with me didn't work. But when they thought my boyfriend killed himself,
right,
they came to my house and checked on me. That girl actually testified.
Yes.
Did you go to her house when you thought? Yes, I did. Did you ever go over there before when she asked you? No, I never did.
Why'd you go over there? Because I probably want somebody to be with me. And what you're referring to, I don't know who actually mentioned this, is she did a dry run almost, because 3 days, I think it was 3 days, two mm-hmm. or three, before he actually killed himself, she was texting some of these girls saying Conrad's missing.
Yes.
And he was, she was actually talking to Conrad at the same time.
Yes.
You've got to be fucked up mentally to be doing that. I mean, period.
Right.
She was telling these girls she's, you know, he's missing, they can't find him, whatever, I think he's killed himself. And at the same time, he was, she was talking to her, or talking to Conrad, are you going to do it tonight? Are you going to do it today? And all this stuff. And they were, you know, giving her sympathy and coming over and seeing her, and she started getting this attention that she had always craved. So I have no doubt that's part of it, but it just goes back to the question, was she in her right mind? You know what I mean? That's the, I think that's the big thing here.
Right.
Both of them. So it was almost a perfect storm of I don't want to say insanity, but you know what I mean, about them, these two particular people coming together over this virtual relationship.
And I will tell you the part that kind of scared me or freaked me out or whatever. They did talk about Romeo and Juliet.
Yep.
And she paid, you know how you can pay to get a star named after somebody?
Yes.
She paid to get a star named after Conrad and told him that. So when you're gone, I'll always be able to look up and know you're up there looking down on me and all this stuff. And he said to her,
I was going to say this. Yeah, go ahead. That's exactly
what
I was going to.
Well, when you do, you know, get older and you have a kid and you have a son, will you name him Conrad? And she says, oh, yes, I definitely will. And
she said there, too, I was kind of hoping you'd be the daddy, but yes, I've already thought about that.
Yeah.
And he said, teach him about tugboats and baseball.
Yes.
And all this stuff. So they're making these plans for the afterlife, essentially.
Right.
After, like I said, after it's already been to the point of, no, go get help, and it's already flipped to, okay, I'm going to support you in this. Are you doing it? Are you doing it? Are you doing it?
So he sees the benefit and the beauty of teaching a little boy about tugboats and
right.
baseball and stuff.
Yes.
And he can't think to himself, hey,
I can really have
I
that.
I can do this. If yeah. I just stick around,
right.
I've got this girl who supports me. We could have a kid. We could have a life someday. And I could get to do this stuff myself. It shows you how little his dad talked to him about life.
I think so.
General.
Because I think at the end, like, you know, because you can kind of see by the text messages, and you can go through, by the way, somewhere and read all these. I think it's public record. I mean, it's insane. There's just there's horrible ones and there's great ones. And
yeah.
This whole story is just, it's just crazy.
I don't want to beat his parents up. I know they're suffering.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. It's not just about that.
I do want to talk about some of their shortcomings, and I know they've already thought about them and they've beaten themselves up about it, so I don't want to pile on, but I wouldn't be honest in my assessment of all this if I didn't say those things, guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about, you know, blaming anybody. This was just a weird, tragic thing. Nobody won here, by
no.
the way. I mean, that bothered me the way they prosecuted it, too. They made her out to be this demon, and then even though the defense, and they didn't show, obviously, every minute of the trial or
right.
whatever, because, I mean, it lasted for, what, a week or so. She did waive her right to a jury trial because she was charged with manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter.
Right.
And, of course, the defense's argument was this is not against the law. Just to tell somebody she was not physically there. And, you know, just because you tell somebody to do something doesn't make it a crime. It may be immoral,
yes,
but it's not illegal.
It's not illegal.
And he came back with the verdict that she was guilty on the basis that basically up until the point where she told him to get back in the truck, it would have all been on him.
Yes.
But when she said, no, get back in, and he complied,
yeah,
you know, that's when the judge said that was reckless conduct that led to the death of Conrad.
Yes. That was your careless and recklessness. That's where you came in, because up until then, it sounded like she was about to not do any time.
Yeah, because they did put the stay of punishment or sentencing until the appeals process.
Yeah, but I mean, when the judge was talking, it sounded like, oh, he's not going to charge her. He understands. And then he said, but up until that point.
Yeah.
And the frustrating part about that is, it's not really documented other than the one text she sent her friend. But how many other false texts did she send her friends? That should have been taken more into consideration.
And I don't know exactly if the defense ever brought that up. I mean, in actual trial, because of course you can't. Again, it's a 2-hour documentary. You don't get the whole entire trial. But that would have been a strong point of mine if I'm a lawyer. Just saying from a lawyer's perspective, is that's because people still think that you see people talking about it even after during the documentary, or you look up videos. Yeah, she texted him, get back in. No, she never said that on a text. As a matter of fact, the last text was more of a concern. Like, I don't know if she knew it was actually real. Is the way it came off to me. Because it was like, Conrad, are you there? You're scaring me. Well, you just knew he was getting in his truck to kill himself. Why are you scared now? So it's kind of like the doctor said, and I think he was right. I mean, I know there's other doctors that may have a different opinion, but he was the one called.
Sure.
So it can only go by his assessment, was that she was kind of in and out of reality, and it seemed like it when you read these texts for the timeline, you know. Like, at one minute, it was all about, yeah, I'm going to get all this attention, I'm the grieving girlfriend, I'm going to help your family out, go ahead and do it. And then when he got close to doing it or whatever, it was like, wait a minute, I'm worried about you, I'm scared.
Yes.
So it was really odd back and forth, almost like going in and out of reality from her perspective.
And I think it was her defense counsel brought this up about what kind of precedent is being set here, because when my client was walking in, somebody yelled, kill yourself. So are they, if she did in
herself?
Yeah,
I said that during the documentary, because she was walking in to get sentenced, I believe.
Yeah.
I think she had already been found, or maybe it was the day of the verdict. I think it was sentencing, though.
Yes.
And then, yeah, because that's right. It was the sentencing, because then they stayed the sentencing, and then she went back like a year later to actually be sentenced. So, because the appeals did fail.
Yeah,
it did fail.
The car rides by.
The car rides by.
And yells out, kill yourself.
Two times.
So now if she goes into her cell and hangs herself or whatever, could they go find that car and prosecute them and say they encouraged her to do that?
Yes.
So it does. It's a slippery slope.
It's a very slippery slope, and this is kind of what we wanted to get to, not only the mental health aspect of things, because we actually want to do this because it involves mental health, and it's a real issue these days, especially these days with all these medications. And I'm not saying all medication's bad. Some are great for people, certain people, but I think over-medicating people complicates these things and makes them worse, especially in young people. That's what we're talking about.
Underdeveloped brain.
Underdeveloped brain. And now you're on a slippery slope where your words can now be considered a crime. So, you know, now literally saying, at least in Pennsylvania, when somebody else, some weird thing happens, and they cite this case, you know, to the judge or whatever as part of their argument, then it can be literally that, you know, go jump off a bridge, and they do it, and you could literally be sentenced to prison for involuntary manslaughter for words.
Yeah, that's kind of really is scary.
it's a scary time with all this stuff, especially all the political stuff going on about words. Because think about that. If it's just somebody in your family, think about how many times you said something stupid or horrible just in because you were mad. You were in a fight or an argument, or you're just mad in general, and you yelled out something stupid to somebody. Now that can be used to put you in prison, potentially.
Yeah.
This is going on in Canada. You know, there's no free speech in Canada. Yeah. And you know, there's people that you can go to jail now for, you know, just speaking wrong to somebody.
And she's a minor.
And she was a minor at the time, right? And
you know the crazy stuff you say when you're a kid. You know, it's scary. It is.
You know the crazy stuff you say when you're a kid, when you're a regular, normal, functioning kid.
Yes.
But you know, I can't even begin to pretend to understand being disturbed.
And I want to be clear here. If that was my son and I saw a girl send those texts to him, I would hate her guts. I would be so mad. I don't think she should have done that.
And oh, no. Yes.
I'm saying legally, I can't see a girl lose any time of her life for that.
Right.
And that's as an innocent, I mean, as a just total outsider. But yeah, don't get me wrong. I get it. I get her parents wanting blood.
It's absolutely immoral.
His parents.
It's immoral whether she knew it was in her mind or not. It was absolutely immoral, the thing she said and telling him to do it, agging him on about it. But it's not illegal.
Right.
Was the point. And there's no law. And they kind of worked their way around the manslaughter law with conduct.
Yes.
And the difference was, it's not like she was there physically to force him in any way, like, for example, at gunpoint, get back in the truck. Yeah. You're going to die one way or the other. Just get back in the truck and do it yourself. That's a little different. This was a text. Well, I'm sorry. No, it was a phone call. The actual get back in was a phone call, supposedly. But we're not even sure that actually happened.
Right.
Because she told, like you said, the text message said, I told him to get back in. But she had also lied to the same girl about having sex, for example. There was a lot of little twists in there.
Right. She had seen a lot of lies.
She had told the same girl that she had not had sex before. Another time she said that she had. She got to third base with Conrad.
Yep.
And another time she said that she was essentially raped by Conrad.
Yeah.
Because she didn't really want to do it, but he kind of forced it on her in a way, and she just didn't want to say no because she liked him and she knew that he would be mad and leave her or something. So she sent contradictory stuff before, and who's to say that she actually even said that on the phone to him is the point. You cannot prove that in any way, shape, or form.
And in this documentary, Conrad's own mother says his dad has blood on his hands.
She did. Of course, she didn't blame herself at all.
Right.
But, yeah, she actually said that. I do think she, and this was in a text because she texted him. She texted her mom and family for weeks after this happened. You know, Michelle.
Oh,
did.
Yes, yes.
So this was a text from the mom to Michelle saying, I do think that his dad and his new family has blood on their hands. So there was always some domestic stuff going on, which, of course, they proved, having police officers on the stand that had actually arrested him for beating him up. And they showed the pictures.
Sure did.
You know, his face was, you know, bruised and bloody and apparently a mild concussion as well.
So I don't know. I highly recommend, if you like documentaries, I highly recommend this one. It gets you. Part one sets you up a certain way. Part two does a 90 on you, or 180.
Yeah, well, I was going to say a 180.
Yeah, and gets you thinking a totally different way. So then at the end, I mean, you're left reasoning, trying to reason with your own self. Going, wait a minute.
You are. One of those things where you want this objective answer of what happened, and you can't really get it. You cannot really get it. You can kind of piece together things. You can see both sides of it, and they clearly present it, both sides. And I think the guy who was the writer I was saying earlier, I forgot his name.
Yeah.
I think he helped kind of put it all in words, because there were several other people that would comment, you know, in the documentary. But he was almost the narrator in part.
He really was.
Part two, really, the mainly.
He felt like he was speaking for me.
He did.
The way he was rationalizing everything.
Right.
And I'm trying to think of the magazine it was. You're right. It was for a magazine.
It was one of the big magazines that covered it. Because like this happened in 2014, yeah. I believe, right? And
As far as the conclusion, she did, again, she was found guilty. Then she was sentenced, and then they put off the sentencing. They stayed that because they knew they were going to appeal.
Yep.
It went to the Supreme Court there, and they denied the appeal. So then she went back a year later, and or actually earlier this year. I think it was February 2019.
Right.
So she just started serving 15 months.
Yes.
And that's her. I guess time served will be 15 months total.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be years of probation and all that stuff. So her life is now, I don't want to say completely ruined. She's still young enough to get out and, you know, get help and maybe enjoy life, I hope. I mean, I really do. Because, again, there's no winners in this situation at all. Both families were tore apart, and yes, and a kid is gone. And I wanted to talk about this not only because it's kind of crazy and a mind twist as far as some surprises in there that come, especially in part two, but the mental health thing and today and the slippery slope, like you mentioned, legally for yes. words.
And if you feel like, I don't know, be sure you know what's going on with your kid's life. And I know
Absolutely.
You can only know exactly what they'll tell you. And
right.
if they don't want to tell you, they're not going to tell you. But look for red flags. Know your kids. Get a good feel for them. If they're not quite acting right, maybe you need to hang out with them. I'm not saying you have to grill them about every little thing, but just hang out with them more so you get a good feel for how they're feeling.
Yes, and not just parents, friends.
Yes.
Young people, if you're listening to something like this, not necessarily this podcast, but if you see somebody at school sitting at the lunchroom alone, or, you know, people kind of talk about, you know, that kid's kind of weird, fucking reach out to them.
Right.
Go over and talk to them just by going and saying, hey, how are you, Johnny?
Yep.
Or Sarah or whatever, at their locker, for example, might make their day. Because we're in a scary time of these, you know, shootings and stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, there's big debates on guns and everything. But let's talk about the mental issues, the root causes of these things. Because these are just tools. Just like the car or the truck in this case, and the air pump was a tool.
Yeah.
But the medication thing, that's one thing, a common thread in all these horrible things is, there's medication involved. There's depression and anxiety medications and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's just, there's no winners here. It's a really sad story, but it's just crazy to think about and to see that you can get the inside scoop of this relationship and what really went down because it's all documented from text messages. That's what's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a case where we're all just kind of, well, I think he was feeling this way, or I think he or she did this or that. You can actually read what they were saying and thinking.
That's right.
You were in their heads throughout this whole process, except again for the actual phone calls.
And if your kid or your friend has tried to commit suicide four times, chances are they're going to try again.
Right.
Don't believe them. You know,
no,
all
yes,
the time.
No.
Don't, you know, revert back to naivete, you know, be, you know, conscious of where they're at, set boundaries, you know, yeah, you can take the truck.
Whatever you got to do. You know? I mean, if they're mad at you, they're mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I've always told my daughter that if you're not mad at me sometimes or hate my guts sometimes, I'm not doing something right.
Yeah.
I would much rather you be mad and alive and, you know, get through it or whatever, then, you know, something horrible like that happened regardless. From either one of them standpoint, because, like I said, even that's what bothered me a little bit. I know we're wrapping up. I guess we're about an hour, but I wanted to mention there. You know, even the prosecutor said there's no winners here, but it really kind of bothered me how they still really laid into her wanting her to go to prison for 7 to 14 years and shit.
I know. It looked like they were wanting a notch on their belt.
They wanted a notch on their belt. And if you know that she like the defense said, I think counseling is proper here.
Yeah.
And I think I would probably agree with that. I mean, I haven't put a lot more thought into, because I'm not sure if she deserves any kind of jail time for words. Because that's, again, the slippery slope we're talking about. But she did do wrong. And I think if you, you know, some, and again, I, some people would say, and I'd probably agree that 15 months is probably a slap on the wrist for something.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's a precedent that's going to be really weird in the future, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and I hope there is some counseling involved. I don't want her parents to go through this later.
Right.
They're already
because she was
going to
do it one time.
That's right.
She just she could have easily been gone before this whole relationship ever took off.
Yeah, let's salvage a life here.
Right.
And I think she can help people.
So anyway, I think we've pretty much covered it. I mean, there's a lot of, we wanted to talk about it because it's not just another, oh, here's a crazy, you know, true crime story. Because I mean, it's hard to talk about these things anyway because real lives are affected, and it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it.
That's right.
And we're not really affected other than just what we saw, you know. So some, you know, small mental way, but there's real families out here that suffering, you know, for these things. And, you want to bring it up and make sure that I think people still have this thing to be talking, you know, not to talk about mental health. They just want to blame tools. And I don't understand that. Every one of us has some kind of mental issue. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter how small or big. Every one of us has been through something, been in a dark place. And so there's no shame in talking about it. And that needs to be said more often.
And having somebody in your life to reach out to is important.
Yes.
Definitely, if you ever feel down or whatever, reach out to people around you. That's what they're there for. And life is hard. And sometimes your friends, they get caught up in their own lives. And maybe they're not always asking you, hey, how are you doing?
Yes.
But they are there if you reach out to them.
Exactly.
You know, they can put all that other stuff on hold.
And if for some reason somebody out there doesn't have somebody to reach out to personally, there are lines. There are telephone numbers. I don't have them right here. Maybe I'll throw them in the description of the YouTube video or something. But there are suicide hotlines. There's people you can talk to. People just need to know in these situations, you're not alone in the world, regardless if you have close friends or whatever. There's a lot of people going through very similar things. That's the bottom line. So you just gotta reach out.
That's right.
But anyway, damn, that almost depressed me again.
I'm kind of leaving a little bit depressed.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it was important to talk about. And again, it was it is a good documentary, like you mentioned. Well done.
It was.
But it's a real, you know, it's real people. So we wanted to talk about it and see what you guys think. So. Let us know what you think in the comments on YouTube. Please be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel if you have not already. If you listen to this on any other podcast platform, this is available everywhere podcasts are available. And yeah, let us know what you think. Have you seen this? What'd you think about it? Because I've read some comments, you know, I watched a few little videos and read some articles and things like that after we watched it. And they even interviewed people during the documentary after, like the judge while he was deliberating. And half the people were saying, yeah, she's evil. Throw her away. Throw her under the prison. You know, she's evil incarnate, you know. Yeah. And others were like, how can you hold her accountable for words? So it's a controversial thing. I'm sure it's, I don't know about, you know, if it's 50-50 or what, but it's interesting to say the least. And it's going to be, I don't know, it's kind of scary. It's kind of scary. Of what that can mean in the future.
I mean, well, honestly, he saw her only four or five times, their whole relationship. If she would have said, get back in there, and he said, kiss my ass, and hung up on her, there were no repercussions.
No.
He did that on his own.
That's right.
He wanted to get back in there.
That's right. I mean, because he had done it several times and kind of got scared and tried it again and got scared. And so, yeah, I mean, if he would have... If he didn't really want to do it, he would have drove to her house.
Yeah, and we talked about it after we watched it. And, you know, how many times have parents said, if your friend told you to jump off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff?
Yes.
You know, so if Conrad was alive, that's what his parents would say. If she told you to get back in there, why did you do it? You didn't have to,
right.
You know. So I don't think she should bear all the burden there just by saying it because – again, watch the documentary. There's reasons behind it.
We scratched the surface a little bit more than scratched the surface, but there's more detailed stuff in there, And then there's a couple more little things, like this, the other girl on the softball team that declined to be interviewed.
Yeah.
Of course, other people didn't want to be in the documentary. So there's other little things in there that add to this. So it's a little more complex than we're even saying.
So, yeah, I'm glad we did it. I couldn't wait to talk about it again. And there's a lot to be learned from this documentary. So many people need to watch it.
Absolutely. I even told my daughter, I was like, you need to come watch this documentary. Yeah. And, I mean, she's out of school now and 18 and everything, but still, people need to see this type of thing because she's still young and, you know, even not just young people either, but I mean, this is, it's really, you're really susceptible then while you're young to these type of things and these peer pressures and I got to be popular and, you know, all this stuff. It's a lot of moving parts.
And real bona fide, I can reach out and touch you. Relationships are so important.
Yes.
This other stuff, it's kind of important, but have some real friends in your life.
Yes, that you can sit down face to face.
Yeah.
In the same room, not messaging somebody, because you're just, it's almost like you're getting numb, you know, and it's just like characters coming through a damn phone.
You're right. Like you said that in the very beginning. It's like you almost forget there's a real person.
Yeah, and I think she did at times. It seemed like she didn't even think about what was really going on. Like, I don't know if she really knew that he was at that Kmart in a truck with a generator running.
I agree.
I don't know if she actually...
It doesn't feel real.
Because her last text did not to me, say, I think he's even there.
If she was sitting in a car next to him watching him, she would have told him, get out of there, when she started seeing him struggle
to
breathe.
She because that was the big thing. You know, why didn't you call the cops or her parents or somebody? And that's what got her as far as the legal thing.
Yeah.
It was her failure to act.
That's right.
But, again, we don't know what actually was said on the phone call because, you know, it was not recorded. So, anyway.
Cool.
All righty. Well, that was dark. Let me go. We need to go play some happy music or something.
Definitely.
I mean, it's a sad story, but it needs to be really talked about. And I'm glad they did a documentary. So, as usual, let us know what you think in the comments on YouTube. Or you can also comment on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and those places as well, Podbean and Spotify. I think there's some comment sections on everything but iTunes and Google Play. But it'll be up there as well. And if you listen on those, feel free to drop us a review if you enjoy these. We'd really appreciate it. And thank you to our Patreons, by the way. I meant to say that in the very beginning. I'm sorry. We wanted to jump right in to this. But thank you to our Patreons that make this possible. Really appreciate it. And if you are interested in supporting the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/smokescreenpodcast. And even a dollar a month will help us out big time. Really, really
That's
appreciate
right.
it. So anyway, guys, as usual, let us know what you think, and we'll let it fade to black.